everyone. Welcome to the last day of May. We are just a couple days away from the full strawberry moon that will happen this weekend. There's just so much going on in my neck of the woods. My daughter is about to turn 18. She's graduating in about 10 days from high school. There's just family and friends coming into town, just 100 things happening at once. But I wanted to follow through on posting this last part of our series that we've been doing in regards to the shadow functions of the personality. So I will definitely get this posted today. And then, of course, because I don't have enough going on, I'll post a new collection on my lauriegreen.net site, which is beautiful things for the home and very seasonally driven. And this new collection will post tomorrow, and it will be available for June and July. And it's so lovely and just a beautiful way to make your home a reflection of you, which is also in alignment with those deeper rhythms and the seasons. That's always my intention with that creative piece there. So check that out. If you're not on my newsletter, that's a great way to always stay in tune with all of those happenings. So you can sign up for that on my website if you haven't done so. It's fun, and I put stuff out fairly often. So, and oftentimes there'll be special deals or connections, you know, that are just available for those who sign up for the newsletter. So anyway, I feel like everything is full to bursting right now, but in sweet and good ways. And of course, there's always growth, always growth. But I'm feeling in my own skin and bones, and most importantly, my heart, that my ability to hold steady and still has increased enormously in the past 9 months. And that feels so great, because I know that all of my dreams are compassing off of that harmony. And so I feel like I have done my part, and the greater universe will absolutely do its part. And that's what today's exploration will be about in the article that I wrote. And again, it's like the third in a series, which I didn't really think of as a series when writing them at the time. But now that I look at them, I definitely see that they were a path they were following, for sure. And what I'll be sharing with you today is called Vanishing Fingerprints, Unlikely Allies and the Cloud of Unknowing. I wrote it in March of 2020. And I didn't read it. Just like last time, I'm going to jump into it live with you. Obviously, I wrote it a couple years ago, 3 years ago. But I want to experience it with you. And I'm sure I'll have pivots or new ways or nuances to share as we go through the material. But it is definitely going into the deep mystery. And in terms of the spine of personality, which we've been talking about in our four-part series here, tapping into those deeply unconscious aspects of the personality releases incredible energy in the service of life. And we become so much greater than the sum of all those personality parts. And that's what I'm touching on today in this article. And I'm just humbled to even have these concepts in my awareness. I stand on the shoulders of so many mystics and poets and depth psychologists and just ordinary people living who have touched on this alchemy. And it's like the most important thing in my life. As precious as my family is to me, as precious as my work is to me, as precious as being healthy and all those things are very important to me. I put lots of loving energy into those things and into those relationships. But this is the primary focus of my life, and I'm kind of in awe of it at the moment. And I feel like it is meeting me in a way that I always hoped that it would. And I've always felt it there, but I guess it's feeling more alive and interactive with me right now. So I think it's a good day to dive into the mystery because, you know, it's always revealing something and yet holding the promise that on this side of life, it's okay not to understand that, and that doesn't take away from its beauty and indeed its power. So that's the frame for today. I hope you're doing so well. And let me share my poem on the full moon, the full strawberry moon, which is coming up. Standing in fullness, what if my beloved loves me without condition? What if my creativity has found its true home? What if abundance is my way of life? What if my countenance is growing younger? What if my wisdom is full of humor? What if my gentleness is my greatest strength? What if my calling is now unfolding? What if my children are well and happy? What if my relationships are lightening? What if it's okay to know deep pleasure? What if my greatest challenge is now dissolving? What if the world I now inhabit first sought me? What if I am enough? And I'm starting to experience what it means to live from that. It can often sound cliched idea, I'm enough. And certainly it's bandied about in the culture and in pop psychology and all the rest of it. But when it really starts to penetrate your heart and you know that you are because you are connected to life itself and you're a beautiful facet of that expression, you are indeed enough. And of course, every human being is enough in that they exist. I completely honor that 100%. But what I'm saying is it's in terms of getting to experience the beauty and the dreams coming alive of our lives, you are enough to do that because of this connection. And deepening into that connection to life itself, however you want to think about that or term it or phrase it, that's it. That's the juice. That's all you'll ever need. And I have, here we go again, something so great to share with you next time. I'll just finish up with the personality article today, but I have an amazing, probably two-part podcast to share in June with you about a beautiful resource that fell into my lap about 10 days ago, maybe 2 weeks now. And it's this wonderful woman in Europe. I'll share her name and all the info at a later time. But she's doing a lot of what we have been doing in terms of the transurfing and really monitoring our thoughts and contributing to our own stillness in our thinking and really getting wise to ourselves about those practices. So she's been doing very, very similar work. And, you know, she might talk about it in a slightly different way. All roads lead to Rome here. It's fine. You'll see how resonant it all is. But she unveiled a piece of when we are envisioning a space that we know we are capable of inhabiting, but maybe in our present moment are not experiencing that in the mirror world. But we've put forth our intentions, etc. and we're doing our work to keep the mind still and all the rest of it. So when that process is unfolding, she has this beautiful lecture that's about an hour. I'm going to link you to it. I'm going to share. I'm going to talk more about her. This is just setting the stage, having a little mystery here. She so clarified something that I did not know yet and that hadn't been covered in what I had read from other folks. Doesn't mean it isn't there, but for whatever reason, this appeared to be new to me. And she talks about the fact that just thinking about two lanes intersecting, if you will, in sort of the quantum grid, when your old lane begins to intersect with your new lane, it can look like everything is going wrong. And a lot of people get discouraged at that point. And she clarifies beautifully, and it makes such perfect sense why that's happening and what to do about that, and fleshes out the greater perspective of why it's even necessary. And I was at a moment where I was having a really challenging day just prior to receiving this YouTube lecture. And all I knew to do the day before, all I could sort of grasp onto was hold steady, hold steady, hold steady. That's what my own wisdom was telling me. So that's what I did. You know, I just employed the practices that we've talked about. I held steady, I held steady. And then 24 hours later, this lecture landed in my lap. And I was gobsmacked because she clarified exactly what I had been going through the day prior. And that's why I was getting that wisdom, hold steady, hold steady. It was so essential that I passed through that without knowing why, without knowing why, because I will never forget that. And then I got, quote unquote, the lesson, the Cliff's Notes to what had actually happened after I had passed that lesson, through that lesson. And I don't want to say test because I'm very mindful of not like making this harder than it is challenging. You know, it requires focus, it requires challenge. But, you know, not like getting in the way of my own head and saying, oh my God, there's going to be all these tests and it's going to be so hard. Waking up is a process that we are in control of and not in control of both. There's that beautiful paradox, and today's all about paradox. The richness of having experienced something and then finding out on the other side of it why all that had gone down the way it did. I was so proud of myself. I was so deeply relieved. I cried. Like, as I'm listening to this YouTube, I was just sobbing because I understood why, but I also understood that I had hung in there and I had surrendered to life. And I'm like, this is the only thing in my life that makes sense, meaning as a practice. Like, this has to be, because this is the only way of perceiving for me, in my experience, that levels everything for everyone. And it doesn't matter what situation you're born into or what your socioeconomic status is or where you got to go to school or what physical abilities or challenges you have. None of that. This is the great leveler. And I so surrendered to that knowing, but yet it's appearing from the inside out in so many instances where the mirror, we don't have the satisfaction of the mirror sort of reflecting that back as soon as we want it to sometimes. But I hung in there and I'm like, this is the only thing that makes sense. This is the only sort of God I would wish to serve is this one that, you know, is in harmony with this approach I've been taking of late with you all, with myself, you know, the last 9 months. So anyway, it was just this really special moment to have this lecture then fall in my lap where this woman who's in the coaching space, but definitely not in the old sort of psychology coaching space that we've talked about on the podcast before. Like, this is really innovative space where she's talking a lot about how the quantum works. And I was so deeply relieved and deeply grateful. And in fact, I reached out to her and said, nobody had explained that little, you know, number five, number six part here. I can't remember which it was. I said, thank you, thank you, thank you. I hadn't ever had that explained in that way. And she just shot back a heart. And I saw among the comments, other people were saying to her the exact same thing. They're like, ain't nobody told us about this little bit here. And I was so relieved and so grateful. And I see why that happens, because it was so important that I move through that with nothing but the fact that I knew it was the right thing to do. And I knew my heart was telling me this is the way. So anyway, that will come up in June. I can't wait to share that with you. And I'm not even going to tell you her name, because I want you to tune in and we're going to talk about that together. It's going to be awesome. So anyway, with that, we're going to dive in to this last article and we'll experience it together, because I'm reading it live with you. So once again, vanishing fingerprints, unlikely allies in the cloud of unknowing. My fingerprints had vanished. I didn't even know that was physically possible. Yet somewhere in the time frame between successfully screening to participate in an at-risk youth case management workshop and applying for a teaching position that unexpectedly opened up over the Christmas holiday 2 years later, my concrete identity had disappeared. Had I laid bricks and polished ceramic tile with my bare hands in the intervening months, inadvertently eroding my signature ridges and fissures? Not in the external world. However, I had undertaken my master's degree in depth and archetypal psychology, so a fair amount of chipping away at rough internal edges and identities had undoubtedly taken place. Having just completed my graduate program in psychology, I knew my ultimate work scenario would likely emerge over time and even require an entrepreneurial invention of a position for my newly honed skills. But out of necessity, I needed to find work quickly. So I enthusiastically applied for the middle school English teaching position, only to find myself on the receiving end of the cosmic joke of disappearing digits. The hiring committee had to send my application off for long-form FBI processing, and I missed the deadline. I was shocked, confused, and suddenly doubting my nature. Typically, my intuition guided me so well, and I had read the tea leaves of this potential job appearing at such an unlikely time of year as a sign. I was good at reading signs, or at least I had been. Luckily, I had the good sense to calm down and regroup. What had I learned in grad school? If I were unwilling to apply this knowledge to my personal situation when the stakes were high, what good would my guidance be when offering it to others in a professional setting? During my graduate studies, I discovered my INFJ preference, a type readily associated with sixth sense awareness, but one that also struggles to ground ideas and experience in the material world of sensation. The introverted intuitive, NI, type's penchant for navigating the waters of the unconscious, seeking symbolism, meaning, and patterns can result in flashes of insight and even visionary perceptions about where cultural changes might or should be heading. INFJs also receive lightning strikes about their own lives, and such moments, in my experience, are exhilarating. I love being an INFJ. For me, this orientation sparks and shimmers, coalescing into a cocoon of ever-emerging content that paradoxically already feels like home. I am rarely alone.
But entering visionary on an Indeed.com job search kicks up less than tangible results. So what to do now? My life circumstances were requiring an important and at times uncomfortable shift in roles as I entered the gladiator arena of sensation occupied by both my inferior function of extroverted sensation, SE, and my demonic introverted sensation, SI. I no longer had the financial cushion of a student loan and was now faced with the reality of repayments and providing for my two children. Was I willing to apply at Home Depot until work more in alignment with my strengths came along? Absolutely. But I also felt like I would be failing a more significant test if I were to accept such a position. INFJs have a fierce independent streak and often dismiss conventional wisdom. To paraphrase Jung, I had created an impossible situation for myself, but such dilemmas are what pitch us into the unnerving, opaque territory of the lower functions. I deeply valued that I was supposed to be using my gifts in service to others. However, my confidence in both my introverted and extroverted sensation, the very functions I needed to become a more effective navigator of the material world, could neither be faked nor rushed. So I returned to my training and rediscovered Marie-Louise von Franz's lectures on alchemy. She referenced the medieval mystical text, The Cloud of Unknowing, which offered spiritual exercises to prepare seekers for an encounter with the divine. Von Franz elaborated, quote, "The cloud within the world of Christian mysticism implied that as one got closer and closer to the divine light through meditation, spiritual exercises, humility, and docility, ultimately the light of God appeared, not as a big illumination, but as a darkening of the human light in an experience of darkness and confusion." Von Franz added that, quote, "Jung has compiled a collection in Ion that describes the North Pole as a seat of constant lack of sun and cloudiness." And she further characterized the murky nature of the evolving individuation path, quote, "In practice, it corresponds to an experience that people do not like to accept, but to which Jung has again and again referred, namely, that with increasing progress in the process of individuation, the deeper and closer people get to the self within themselves, the more confused and complicated the situation becomes. It does not become easier." While I was not so heady as to assume I was approaching the archetype of the self, I did know I was making progress. Realizing anew that increasing confusion is the way of things, I was able to quiet my internal resistance long enough to discern what soulful action in the external world might look like. The test at hand required that I set aside conventional wisdom, get a job, any job, in favor of the imaginal approach to problem solving. For me, this amounted to holding the tension of the opposites while accessing a pleasurable practice that worked my underdeveloped sensing functions. In the frigid Wyoming winter in which I found myself, I naturally longed for warmth and ease of movement, not the reflexive clenching of muscles against the cold. The YMCA pool was as close as I was going to get. I decided to create a daily meditative ritual out of a late afternoon journey to the Y, only a few blocks from my house. The rules were simple. I would assist my function integration and psychological stretch by enveloping myself in sensory experience, and I would, for the 45 minutes in which I swam, only allow positive or at least neutral thoughts to accompany me. I braved the sub-zero temperatures, hugging my coat in around my body as my boots crunched through the crusty snow. My resolve not to worry during this brief interlude was at first countered by increased disaster chatter. You are irresponsible. You're going to have to borrow money from your parents. But I pressed onward, feeling the bite of the unforgiving weather, doing my best to detach from the icy thought tendrils of despair. Inside the Y, I immediately noticed the humid rush of prickly chlorine-tinged air as it jerked my mind back into the present moment. Peeling off my layers and scurrying through the shower, I plunged into the lap pool, welcoming the hush of underwater nothingness as my limbs slowly eased into the pole swing and glide of the butterfly stroke. It only took a few moments for sensory intelligence to work its magic, and I felt myself relax, enjoying the buoyancy of the water surrounding and supporting me as I slipped through its medium. Bit by bit, my discipline of mind, neutrality, began to uptick into stirrings of possibility. A few days into this routine, I perceived a growing confidence. No external circumstances had shifted, but I somehow felt better. And then I suddenly noticed all the bright, beautiful 1-inch tiles lining the pool. How had I not seen them before? Each of these little cobalt blue squares bore witness to my lapse through the water. I decided, in the spirit of play, to imagine that each one of these little tiles represented $5,000. For the time in which I swam, I engaged this unexpected image and allowed myself to bathe in the luxury of its abundance. Why not? I literally had nothing to lose. As I glided by the tiles, I envisioned them winking their encouragement. My INFJ vision easily saw this. Thus emboldened, I upped the ante and visualized paying off my credit card balance and upgrading my car. With each tile representing $5,000, it hardly took any squares to achieve my imaginal feat. This made me smile. I increasingly felt a sense of wholeness and uncanny expectancy. My pool ritual was changing me by elevating my psychological state. Whatever choice I would need to make regarding work, I began to trust that the right next move would feel like I felt swimming laps, at ease, in an ocean of support, awash in flickering blue tiles of plenty. Depth psychology devotees often proclaim that one should, quote, hold an image, advice which can be difficult to grasp, let alone put into practice. But suddenly, amidst an enjoyable activity that employed my lesser developed functions, an image had found me. And then the phone call came. Even as I write this, I relive the wave of astonishment I experienced as I processed the news that a third party was offering to intervene in an unresolved legal matter that had been lingering for months. This individual wanted to buy both the co-owner and myself out of a property I no longer had any interest in maintaining. Because the court had already awarded me a decision, the bottom line was that the entire amount of the proposed buyout would go to me in the form of a check for thousands of dollars, over a dozen blue tiles, in 1 week. By remaining faithful to my NI sensibilities, yet stretching the muscle of my lesser used sensory functions, I was granted not only an extraordinary image with which to commune, but also the swift, miraculous answer to my impossible situation. The financial windfall allowed me the freedom to create a website, virtual school, and workshops that offer courses in dreams, archetypes, and practical skills for working with images for those new to depth psychology. Now, 3 years after my image immersion baptism, I am once again being challenged to trust the psyche as I journey deeper into the mystery. As before, the terrain is familiar in that I am at a crossroads with career decisions, and I recently moved from Wyoming to North Carolina in bold response to an inner muse. The stakes are high, the distance is greater, and I'm seeking to penetrate or at least learn from an even denser, quote, cloud of unknowing. As if in reply to my internal perception of veils and mist, the psyche immediately provided a concrete example of this unreality when, in November of 2019, I found myself holding a copy of The Quantum Revelation, a radical synthesis of science and spirituality by Paul Levy. I don't even remember picking the book up off the shelf in my local bookstore, but I recall staring down at its cover and scanning the author bio. It described Levy as a former economics researcher for Princeton University who experienced a life-altering trauma that subsequently sent him along a dual course of study, Tibetan Buddhism and quantum physics. I was shocked as I read of Levy's intense interest in the work of Jung and how he managed the C.G. Jung Foundation Book Service in New York in 1988. It all began to make a certain unknowing sense. Within my hands, I held a Jung enthusiast's exploration of a psychological significance of the quantum field. Given the paradigm-altering nature of quantum discoveries, what greater cloud of unknowing could there be? And the book, a rather uncanny image, had quite literally found me. I cleared time from my schedule to read Levy's text, readily appreciating his gift for making such difficult material accessible in layperson's terms. I'm not understating matters to say I am forever changed. There was my life before this book, and there is my life now. I've experienced actual physical reactions to the quantum implications set forth, and overwhelmingly the sensations have been positive, tears of joy and relief, a pervading sense of emotional calm that everything's going to be okay, increased mental clarity. I've also experienced occasional moments of panic, although this feels too strong. Rather, I encountered what I can only call a sort of belief vertigo. In these moments of discomfort, a quiet, steady part of my mind reasoned that this was a normal response to discarding centuries-old collective assumptions about the Newtonian-Cartesian physical properties of matter. The text made a startling case for the ways in which our nighttime dreams, waking reality dreams, and quantum dreams all interact with each other. Levy quoted extensively from Einstein, celebrated American theoretical physicist John Wheeler, Nobel laureate Wolfgang Pauli, and Jung, among others, as he explored the questions of how humans are participating in creating our experience of reality and what such discoveries mean in both psychological and practical terms. Using Jung's terminology, Levy explained that quantum physics widened the threesome of classical physics, space, time, and causality, to include synchronicity, thereby making it a foursome. Jung himself, in his 1953 correspondence with Pauli, wrote, quote, "It means a lot to me to see how our points of view are getting closer, for if you feel isolated from your contemporaries when grappling with the unconscious, it is also the same with me. In fact, more so, since I am actually standing in the isolated area, striving somehow to bridge the gap that separates me from the others. After all, it is no pleasure for me always to be regarded as esoteric. Oddly enough, the problem is still the same 2,000-year-old one. How does one get from 3 to 4? I draw comfort from knowing that such celebrated minds endured their fair share of confusion and even doubt while traveling the borderlands. In my own experience, I often discover that essential muscles are developed during such times, even though I can't comprehend the psychological relevance of this musculature until later. Quantum contemplation is highly paradoxical, and centers of gravity and belief shift in surprising ways, realigning one's old assumptions. For example, I'm coming to expect that the conventional adage, "you believe it when you see it," is a lie. In the quantum field, "you'll see it when you believe it" is the shocking, liberating rule of thumb. What does all this mean for an INFJ? I'm still sorting it out. But I want to teach what I most need to learn, as the saying goes. Indeed, I'm presently creating a series of online courses inspired by the quantum revelation, my own depth psychological perspectives, and the visual imagery of Alice in Wonderland. Grounding this creation process in pleasurable sensory experience, I know will be key to both my successful integration of the material and its eventual helpfulness to others. In a way, I'm now just swimming in a much larger pool, but the same guiding practices promise to carry me through. As I revisit the symbolism of my vanishing fingerprints, I'm gobsmacked by the significance of this image. If, as Levy suggested, we are being challenged to reimagine our default adherence to the concrete, material world, to press ever forward into the mysteries and implications of conscious co-creation with the unified field, then undoubtedly our former identities will be called into question. Perhaps even more unnervingly, the concept of time itself will be radically called into question. I am still a very human woman in a very Newtonian world, except when I'm not. Parts of me, just like my fingerprints, are now refusing to be captured by conventional means, be they high-tech digital scans or fossilized thoughts, collective beliefs, and limiting emotional patterns. As for individuation, we each have the unlikely yet mighty assistance of our less conscious functions to guide us in our ever-expanding endeavors to touch the self beyond the cloud of unknowing. So it's a shorter article than the others, but as I was just reading that aloud, you know, into the mic, I'm just absolutely encouraged and at this point unsurprised at the thread of consistency I'm seeing. At this moment that I wrote this, I had yet not done 5-MeO-DMT, which is the most listened to podcast that I have, which was another level of lifting the veil. And I know many of you have listened to that already, and that hadn't happened yet when I wrote this. But clearly, I'm on that cyclical path. And actually, I'll be more particular. It's a spiral, because there's the cyclical nature of returning to these themes again and again, but the spiral means it's moving ever forward, penetrating into this cloud of unknowing. And the cloud of unknowing itself is, you know, like, I can't understand a lot of it. I have the text. It was written by a monk, you know, hundreds of years ago. And it's his best attempt to try to say what's happening when you are merging with the self, basically. And it's a beautiful text. And, you know, sometimes I dip into it, sometimes I don't. It's readily available, you know, online to purchase. There's no author. The author remains anonymous. So that's a fascinating tale in and of itself. But I think the thing that I find so beautiful and comforting is that this thread of, yes, I'm going to learn about personality. Yes, I'm going to learn about depth psychology. I'm a teacher. I'm this. At this moment in time when I wrote this article, I hadn't started the podcast. I hadn't learned about reality transurfing. I hadn't done that one dip into a psychedelic that forever, you know, gave me an experiential reference point of what it is like to see with no filters of the human narrative in the way. And I continue onward. I continue onward with you and beside you. And I'm deeply, deeply grateful and appreciative of this journey. You know, my daughter's ready to graduate. And I just can't help thinking I'm also graduating in some very real senses, just as a human at this point with so much more to learn and experience. But definitely, I have remained faithful to embracing the experiential aspect, which is deeply buried in my personality structure, the experiential reality of a life in harmony with these divine laws. And that is so joyful and liberating to me. So I don't really have a lot to say actually now about this article, other than I'm just seeing the themes repeat over and over and over again. I know I'm enough. I know you're enough. I know every single one of us is enough. And I'll just end with this thought right here. I was walking Tippy in our neighborhood, as I always do. But about 3 days ago, I came around a typical corner that I always travel with her. And this little mockingbird just, I had never seen anything like it. She was like dive bombing my head. She wasn't interested in Tippy. It was the height at which I was. And I couldn't understand there for a minute. And I stopped and I just said, you know, to the universe, I'm like, I'm listening. Like, what am I supposed to be getting here? And she dived at my head like 3 different times. Like, it moved my hair and everything. And I could feel her worry and her agitation. And then it dawned on me that she must have a nest nearby, and that she was a young mother, and that she was because of my height being closer to her nest than Tippy's. That's why she was interested in me. And she has remained there for the last 3 days. And, you know, I saw her again today. And she was right there, vigilant. And I do not know where the nest is, but I know there is one there. And I just couldn't help but have huge compassion over how exhausted she must be. And I feel like I've lived so much of my life in that vein, like having these precious little eggs or precious little babies, whatever they may be, that I'm trying to nurture along and be vigilant about it and protect it. And what I want to end today by saying is, as we merge with this cloud of unknowing, I'm realizing that the vigilance and the tending to that which is most precious to us is starting to happen naturally. It's starting to happen from the force of love itself moving through me. It's taking less energy in terms of my human grappling with that. And that feels really good. And no doubt I will attract more feelings and experiences and occasions of relief by just surrendering into that more and more. This little mockingbird has been such a picture for me the last few days that I don't have to keep doing this all on my own anymore. That incredible force that really is us, divine, authentic self, whatever you want to call it, it can be in the driver's seat. And we can relax. And we can live a beautiful life that is full of the joys that we are meant to experience here. All the most precious wisdom that's ever truly resonated for me was about the fact that this is supposed to be fun and joyful and playful. This experience here, that if we're trying super hard and we're worried, that we've slipped back into that egoic structure of thinking. And my wish for myself and those near and dear to me and my greater community, certainly about which you are all included, just want to keep relaxing into that and knowing that we don't have to have our dukes up all the time and that something beautiful is happening through us. So I hope this 4-part series has been helpful in terms of how some of the mysteries and nuance of personality present themselves. I look forward to sharing the next bit of wisdom in June. And thanks for being part of the unfolding with me. Until next time, take good care. Thank you. Hi, everyone. If you're enjoying this podcast, remember to hit subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. And if my work is nourishing your heart and imagination, consider supporting the Apothecary Podcast. Just follow the links to make a contribution. And for the full scope of my projects and offerings, including my weekly newsletter, visit lorigreen.net.